Good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. I'm glad to have you with us. If you are thinking about buying a car, either a new car or perhaps one that is new to you, but you haven't quite been able to decide on a particular make and model, or you have questions on specific cars, we will try to help this morning on Focus. We are very happy to have with us as a guest Mike Quincy. He's automotive content specialist with Consumer Reports. Their annual auto issue is now available. It's available for purchase on the newsstands around the country. And this is the issue that has ratings of new and used cars. They have overall picks in particular categories. They organize it according to things like fuel economy, for example, or the cars that they think are fun to drive. So if that's what you're looking for, you can look at it that way. And then there's also ratings for specific particular cars you can look at. It's a good information resource for you if you're in the market for a car or you're just curious about what's available. And we can take questions this morning on any and all of that kind of thing as well. I'll ask about some of the information that's in the magazine, but we're here so that if you have a question about a car, new or used, any make and model, whatever is on your mind, give us a call, and Mike will do his best to give you an answer. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. So those are the numbers. And if you'd like to send an email, you can do that to will-talk@illinois.edu. At any point, questions are certainly welcome. And Mike, hello.
Hey, good morning. How's everybody today?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Very good, thanks.
Good. Well, thanks very much for being with us again. I know Harriet just came in the studio before we got going and said this is now the sixth time that we have talked to you.
So it is my pleasure. I love coming on, and I really appreciate you having me on.
All right. Well, maybe just as a way of starting out, would you want to mention a couple of your overall top selections? This is where you take everything, fuel economy, design, safety, handling, all of that, and try to crunch that, and then in a particular category, come up with the thing that you say is, considering that, all those things, that's the best pick.
I'm glad you asked. The April issue of Consumer Reports, one of our most popular articles, is called Top Picks, and what we do is we look at certain categories around the automotive market, and we try to pick the best of the best. These are the cars that did well in Consumer Reports tests, have average or better reliability according to our reliability surveys, and haven't failed any crash tests. And let's pick a broad category first off, the family sedan. For a family sedan, Consumer Reports is really big on the new Toyota Camry Hybrid. The number that you need to remember with the Camry Hybrid is 38 miles per gallon overall in Consumer Reports tests. I mean, this gets fuel economy as good compared to anything except something that's called a Prius, which is also a very popular hybrid. We really like the redesigned Camry, and we think it'll fit the needs of a lot of people. And again, you can't get past that great fuel economy.
Yeah, I think it's interesting almost as far back as I can remember, I think that the Camry has overwhelmingly been your top pick for family sedan.
When you look at family sedans or even minivans, Toyota and Honda are always duking it out for the top spot. Some years we've really been fond of the Honda Accord for a family sedan. Other years it's been the Camry. For minivans, we really like the Toyota Sienna this year. But in other years, the Honda Odyssey has come out on top. And in fact, the current design Honda Odyssey actually outpoints the Toyota Sienna. But the Odyssey has below average reliability in Consumer Reports reliability rating, so the nod goes to the Sienna.
Yeah, and I guess something that's also striking here, and I think it's been true for some time, is that the overwhelming number of the cars that are your top picks are from Asian car makers. That doesn't necessarily mean the cars were made there, but that, you know, it's Toyota, it's Hyundai, and it's
Subaru.
I was looking for what else, except for two categories. The sporty car, your top pick is the Mustang, and for pickup, it's the Chevrolet Avalanche.
Yes, it is it's kind of deceiving when they talk about whether it's a Japanese car, an American car, a Korean car.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, and I'm really glad you did, a lot of these products are actually made in the United States. And even some cars that are branded from Detroit might be made in Canada or Mexico. So it's really tough to kind of nail down the actual origin of the car. And that's what, you know, Consumer Reports kind of puts a filter on it and said, listen, we're going to test them all, every price range, and we want to tell you, you know, everybody what is the best value for your money. And I think that's really the bottom line.
Yeah, so that's, again, that's the kind of thing. So if it's important to you that your car was assembled by workers in the United States, then you can, in fact, find out that information. But that does not necessarily mean that your choice is a Ford, a Chevy, or a GM car.
Exactly. And even some of the parts of the cars that are made in the United States are sourced from all parts of the world. I mean, we're a real global economy these days, and while we want to make sure that people in the United States are working and they have jobs, we all buy products that are made in other countries.
Yeah. So you mentioned that your overall pick for a family sedan was the Camry Hybrid, and that it gets very impressive mileage. You mentioned another car. I think people have heard of this. That's the Prius. So that also continues for green car. That's your top pick.
We love the Prius. The Prius, when you think about it, is an amazing technical accomplishment. This is a car that that holds, honest to goodness, four or five normal adults. It has good visibility. It has excellent fuel economy, 44 miles per gallon overall in Consumer Reports test. And it does it all in a real practical, hatchbacky kind of wagon body style. So if you're not carrying people, you can fold the rear seats down. You have a small station wagon. It has incredibly good reliability. And for I guess, about 11 years running now, the Toyota Prius has been a real technical marvel and a car for people that they just say, I want to burn less fuel and be a little kinder to the environment. And the Prius has a lot of things going for it.
Yeah. Now, this, I'm sure that this question has come up when we've talked before, and it's the thing that I think people always want to know about the Prius, and that has to do with the battery life, that is, the batteries that provide the electric part of the power train. How much you can expect to get out of a battery, and I think particularly people have that question in mind if they're thinking about the possibility of buying a pre-owned Prius.
Right, and we've talked to all the auto manufacturers that produce hybrid models, and what we are told over and over is that the batteries are going to last the life of the vehicle. And certainly in the early stages of hybrid development, we really had to take their word for it. However, we're finding in our own reliability surveys, and Consumer Reports sends out surveys to its nearly 8 million magazine and website subscribers, and according to the data that we've got data on 1.3 million vehicles, the hybrid data shows that this technology is holding up quite well, and we're not seeing any propensity for batteries in hybrids to show any kind of rates of failure. So I think at this point we have to say that that the hybrid technology, and especially the batteries, are holding up quite well.
Yeah. You know, something else that's really striking about your top picks, I mentioned that there has been this trend for a very long time for the top picks to be Asian nameplates, at least, and among your top picks, the name that comes up most is Toyota, and also there's a Hyundai and there's a Subaru. There are no Hondas here. What's going on with that?
Honda has really kind of fallen on some hard times. I don't know if it's a midlife crisis that the company is going through, but a lot of the latest designs from Honda have really fallen flat in Consumer Reports tests. They're still very much focused on fuel economy, which is wonderful. We applaud that. But some of their hybrid models that they put out recently, from the Honda CR-V to the Honda Civic Hybrid, which was just redesigned, and the Honda Insight, have not scored high enough in Consumer Reports testing to be recommended. The reliability is good, the fuel economy is good, but Honda has really lost their edge when it comes to handling, steering feedback. Good braking performances have also been down. Not sure what's going on with Honda, but they almost seem like they've kind of lost their way.
Now, you do have a section here where you are interested in upcoming new models of a number of cars, and actually one of the things here you seem to be really interested in, or perhaps looking forward to being able to look at closely, is a new design for the Accord.
Yeah, and this is a hugely important vehicle for Honda. I mean, the Accord really put Honda on the map back in the early 70s, and a number of Accord models have done well in Consumer Reports tests. What I always liked about the Accord is compared to, say, a Camry or a Chevrolet Malibu, the Accord always had much more engaging steering. You got great feedback. The handling was sharper. It just felt like the sportiest of the family sedans that are out there. But Honda still has a continuing problem of road noise. Their cars seem to constantly be noisy. And maybe they're noisier because they don't have as much insulation. They have thinner glass to save weight, to get better fuel economy. Who knows? But you know, that the Honda Accord, as nice as it is still a pretty noisy car.
Mm. Well, I'm interested that all I'm going at by is the picture that's here in the magazine. But to me, the body design here is pretty radical in terms of redesign. They seem to be going beyond the sort of bland family sedan and going for something much different. And as a matter of fact, it sort of puts me in mind of some of the more recent Volkswagen designs.
I don't think you can fault Honda's exterior styling. I think all of their cars look really nice. The problem really isn't the styling. It's the dynamics. It's where the rubber meets the road kind of issue. But yes, I mean I agree with you. I think that the styling of the upcoming Accord does look racy. We especially have a nice picture of the Honda Accord Coupe in the April issue of Consumer Reports. And that they're, you know, maybe they're trying to remake their image. I don't know, but really what Honda has to get back down to is the basics. I mean, the cars have to steer and brake better.
Yeah, and maybe one other thing just in this section to also acknowledge the fact that, as you do in the magazine, that while it's still true is that Japanese automakers, they have the top five spots in your ranking. As you write here in the magazine, the lead is shrinking, and you say that General Motors and Chrysler, with each redesign of their cars, they're building better cars.
I think that's absolutely true, and it's really good news for folks that are rooting for the home team. After the reorganization and bankruptcy hearings and the government bailout, which really rankled a lot more parts of the buying public than I thought, they've had to redesign themselves. They had to reinvent themselves. The products coming out of General Motors and Chrysler, as you mentioned, are getting better and better. Their quality and reliability have gotten better. Their performance has gotten better. Their styling and design is looking really good. And that does bode well for Detroit. There's a lot of smart people working in Detroit, and certainly not leaving out Ford, a company that did not take any government money, but they're led by a very dynamic and smart guy named Alan Mulally, who has done almost everything right in helping to redesign Ford starting a number of 4 or 5 years ago. And really, if Mulally is on top of everything and it works out the way he's got it planned, I mean, he's going to be a hero in Detroit. And when they write the history of how Detroit has evolved, there should be chapters written for Alan Mulally.
Our guest in this hour of Focus is Mike Quincy. He's automotive analyst at Consumer Reports, the new issue of the magazine. The April issue is out now, and it's the issue where they rate the best and the worst cars. Maybe you're thinking about buying a car, new or used, and you are not sure what you want. Or maybe you have in mind two or three different cars, and you'd like to know what they think. Well, they do rate them in a number of categories, and this is a good information resource you'll want to take a look at. And we're here to take whatever questions you have. We have somebody who is ready to go. You have questions about specific cars or general questions about trends in the industry, you can give us a call, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. And here's our first in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm calling. My partner and I have a dog and a two-year-old, and we're looking to buy a used kind of family station wagon. He currently drives a Volvo station wagon, and I have a Toyota Corolla, and his gets horrible gas mileage, and mine is just too small for all four of us. So we're looking to buy something station wagon-y with, you know, under 100,000 miles, preferably, and looking to spend between $10,000 and $15,000. Are we totally out of line in wanting that, or is there something you could suggest that's reliable?
Sure. I mean, actually, we have an excellent section of the April issue of Consumer Reports called Reliable Used Cars for Every Budget. And as you were describing what you were looking for and how much you could spend, I turned to the page that says minivans and wagons. And in your budget, I would definitely look at a 2002 to 2004 Honda Odyssey. This has plenty of room inside for dogs, kids, all that stuff. It is the minivans are the world's best family vehicle ever, and I don't care what anyone says or what kind of image you think it has, but minivans totally rock, and you can get some really good used ones. I'd also, staying in that segment, I would look at a 2002 to 2005 Toyota Sienna, also a great minivan, excellent reliability, done very well in Consumer Reports tests. If you're looking for something slightly smaller, I would look for a used Subaru Outback wagon.
Okay, that's kind of what we were leaning towards, was the Outback wagon. What do they get decent gas mileage even once they get kind of in the higher mileages? Same with the minivans. What kind of gas mileage do they get?
Well, they get decent fuel economy, but you have to realize that you're talking about a vehicle that has full time all wheel drive. So that in and of itself kind of makes it way down a little bit. The last Outback wagon that we tested was a four-cylinder model. It got 24 miles per gallon overall in Consumer Reports test, which isn't bad for an all-wheel drive wagon.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right. Very good. Thank you. And other questions are welcome. The specific car you're thinking about, do you have a question? Give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Seems to me that category, maybe that a small station wagon, or maybe the what sometimes called a small SUV or a crossover, which is generally, I think these cars are built on the same platforms as passenger cars, seem to be incredibly popular now. Maybe I just pay attention to it now because a couple of years ago we bought one. We bought a Tiguan, which we like very much, and as I look around, I see so many of those cars in that category. What has made, do you think, that the small SUV, the crossover, so popular?
I think that you know, people don't stop having kids, right? I mean, it's kind of a universal truth that most people are having kids. And you think about the evolution of the family car, and it went from when I was growing up in the 60s and 70s, it was all big station wagons, and then there seemed to be a rebellion against that, and there came the birth of the minivan, which ran really strong for a number of years, and then came sport utility vehicles, because minivans had this crazy bad image, which I still don't understand, but most of the early sport utility vehicles were big truck-based full-frame models that were bulky and clumsy handling and got terrible fuel economy. And so the manufacturers, as smart as they are, they said, well, let's go to car-based platforms, which are lighter and get better handling and better fuel economy. And I think you're finding that crossover vehicles, as you mentioned, are really the family vehicle of choice, but they certainly make loads of sense for people that don't have any kids but have, as the auto manufacturers like to say, active lifestyles, quote-unquote, which I've never understood and I've always hated because they all say the same thing. But a small SUV like a Subaru Forester, a Toyota RAV4, a Honda CR-V does so many things well. And if you're living where there's snow, they have all-wheel drive, and you can make them really luxurious. You put leather seats in them and heated seats and awesome stereos, and so you're really not making any sacrifices driving a truck.
Yeah, just a few years ago, the car before this one that we had in our family was the first car we ever had with heated seats, and once you've had heated seats, there was no going back.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, I look at how soft we're getting.
It's true. Now, we haven't made to make the big jump to cooled seats, which actually people are saying, what? Yes, actually, they do really exist. I'm not sure we'll ever be in that kind of income bracket, but such a thing is also possible.
Well, we used to think that way with heated seats. I mean, it almost seemed like the high-end luxurious models got them. So, you know, the trickle-down theory can certainly happen with automotive equipment.
All right. Other callers here. We have a cell phone next, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I'm a long-time Honda owner. If I told you how many I've owned, you'd think I was either lying or crazy. But I currently have an 08 Honda Accord, and I'm extremely unhappy with that car for a variety of reasons. And I just caught the tail end of your show there a minute ago where you were talking about the new model Hondas. And I was wondering if you have a suggestion of an American car that is similar in size to a Honda Accord, but hopefully is good or better than the current ones that are out there now.
Well, thanks very much for your question. It's an excellent one, and I think if you're thinking, I mean, again, we talk about what is an American car, and we have kind of loose definitions because a number of the top performing models in the family sedan category and Consumer Reports ratings are not necessarily American branded, but they're built in the United States, such as the Nissan Altima, the Toyota Camry, and as you mentioned, the Honda Accord, all built in the United States. Also, the Subaru Legacy is built in Indiana. So there are a lot of models to choose from that will outpoint your Accord. And you know, we agree with you, the Accord is not as good as it used to be. For an American branded car, I would look for the Ford Fusion. The four-cylinder model or the V6 did very well in Consumer Reports tests. Excellent reliability. In fact, reliability of the Fusion is as good or better than anything branded from Japan. So I think my first stop would be the Ford dealership and looking at the Fusion.
I see. Well, the thing I've noticed about the Hondas, they don't seem to be receptive anymore to suggestions of their shortfalls. Give you an example, the driver's seat. You cannot get the bottom of the seat to a level position. It's always cocked up in the front. And you call them and you complain, they could care less. Anyway, I appreciate your input on that, and I'll certainly look at a Fusion.
Good luck.
All right, thanks for the call. We'll go on here. Next, we'll talk with someone in Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Hey.
Yeah.
For the lady wanting a wagon, we have we just recently bought a Jetta diesel sport wagon. Great mileage, great handling. I was just wondering what you thought of those cars and why they didn't get the nod.
Oh, you know, I am totally with you on diesels. The test that Consumer Reports has done with the Volkswagen diesels have been tremendous. We tested a diesel Jetta wagon with a manual transmission, got 36 miles per gallon overall.
Yeah, that's what we drive, and going back and forth between Illinois and Georgia, we've gotten it up to 50 miles a gallon.
I love this car, especially for highway drives. The cruising range, when you fill up your tank with diesel fuel in your little Jetta TDI and you hit the highways, it seems like you drive forever before the fuel gauge budgets.
It's true. You can. I can get almost all the way home to Athens, Georgia on one fill-up.
It is an amazing car. I really like it. The problem that I have with Volkswagens is they really run hot and cold with the reliability. This year, in this year's Consumer Reports reliability surveys, the Jetta has an average rating, which is good enough to be recommended. But you just never know with Volkswagen. Sometimes it's going to be great. Sometimes it's going to be absolutely terrible. But I am totally in your camp. I love small diesels, and I hope that more and more manufacturers start selling them.
So the reliability thing, is that something that we need to be looking out for future?
I think you have to. Every time you buy a Volkswagen, I think you have to go into it with the mindset of it's probably not going to be as drop-dead reliable as your average Toyota, Honda, or Subaru.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry
to say
that.
We had a Passat a number of years ago and really didn't have any. It was a lease, so we turned it in at the end of 4 years.
You see, that's actually good advice in and of itself, and whether it's a Honda, whether it's a Volkswagen or an Audi, which are vehicles that I really like, and they have beautiful interiors, they drive well. But often when someone says, you know, I'm thinking about buying an Audi Q5, it's a small car-based SUV, and I say, you know, love the Q5, but I would lease it, I wouldn't buy it.
Really? Well, we bought this time.
I hope it works out for you, but honestly, I think you have one of the best models. I love the Jetta wagon.
It's a good, I mean, so far, knock on wood, it's a great car. I hope it stays that way. But so that's why it doesn't get the full support. Okay. Great. Well, thank you.
Ryan,
have a great
thanks.
Day. You're welcome.
Well, I'm glad we got to this because in the section, you have a little section here in the magazine of your test notes. And one of the things that you write about is diesel and the fact that you tested four diesels from Mercedes and Volkswagen and that they did well on mileage. It seems that we've talked about this in the past, and one of the issues was that if you wanted to have a diesel car, there were very few choices. Maybe in the past, yeah, you could have one Volkswagen and you could have one Mercedes, and that was that.
Yes, yeah. And that's it's too bad because in the early 1980s when they had the second really intense fuel price spike, a number of manufacturers started putting out diesels, the American manufacturers in particular, but word is that they were so unprepared for this that they took gasoline engines and did what they could to convert them into diesels, and they were absolute reliability nightmares. They were so bad that a whole generation of Americans thought, well, diesel cars, you've got to be kidding me. The one that I bought from GM or Ford was terrible. I'm never going back. But diesels nowadays are much more reliable. They burn a lot cleaner. They have low sulfur fuel, so they're not putting out as much exhaust emissions. And I think that with pending oil prices continuously going up, you have to consider diesels. I mean, look at Europe. The diesels are all over Europe. Small displacement four-cylinder models are very normal in Europe, where the price of regular gasoline is much higher than it is in the United States.
Hmm. We have another caller here. This is someone in Champaign. This is line one. Hello.
Hello. Do you have any opinion on the Fiat 500?
Yes, I do. Ma'am, I have opinions on everything. I'll tell you. But the Fiat 500 is Consumer Reports has tested two of these models. We tested the regular coupe as well as the convertible, and I have to say, we're very impressed by the way they drive. They have excellent steering, very fun, agile handling. Just enough horsepower to make it interesting, but not too much to get in trouble. About 33 miles per gallon overall in Consumer Reports test. But the big unknown for the 500 is reliability. We don't have any reliability data yet, and it certainly you can't crucify Fiat from the sins that they had in the 1960s and 70s because their cars were absolutely dreadful in terms of reliability. So we're kind of hopeful that the new Fiats are going to be more reliable. But we have to wait and see.
Great. Thank you so much. I really want one. All I have to do is find a dealer close enough to be able to get one to be serviced.
Yeah, they definitely have curb appeal. I mean, dare I say they're cute. It doesn't make any sense coming from a man, but they're honestly really good-looking and fun little cars, and I'm kind of keeping my fingers crossed that the reliability is good.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. We're talking this morning in this part of Focus with Mike Quincy. He's an automotive analyst at Consumer Reports. The April issue of the magazine is out, and it's the car issue. So if you're thinking about buying a car, either a new one or a used car, and you're interested in some advice or there's a particular car you're thinking of, take a look at the magazine. It's a good resource. We have another caller. We get some emails here. We'll talk some more after a short break. This is Focus.
Programs on WILL are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting audiences to enjoy Krannert Uncorked, a weekly free wine tasting almost every Thursday at 5 p.m. in the lobby. More information is available at krannertcenter.com or 217-333-6280.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We are here weekday mornings from 10 until noon with 10 different topics every week. In the second hour today, Celeste Quinn will be hosting the show, and her guest will be Dr. Carrie Carlson. She's a veterinarian who specializes in treating cats and taking care of cats. We do a regular show here where we talk about dog care and behavior, and we thought we should do something for all the cat folks out there. And so if you have cats in your home and you have questions about their health, you can call in hour number two. Tomorrow morning, we'll talk about Syria, what has been going on there recently with Joshua Landis. He's been on this program a couple of times recently, and he'll be here visiting the campus, will be with us tomorrow morning in the 10 o'clock hour. We'll also talk about the issues of protecting privacy from aerial surveillance With now the coming and easy availability of drone aircraft, things that both government can use, but actually anybody can have one now. And we'll have two guests, Catherine Crump and Jay Stanley, and they're both with the American Civil Liberties Union. We are here weekday mornings from 10 to noon. As I said, you can check the schedule or listen to past programs by going to our website, which is WILL.illinois.edu. You can follow us on Twitter, Will Public Media. We're also on Facebook. We're talking about cars this morning in this hour of the show. Mike Quincy is with us from Consumer Reports. He is an automotive analyst and has been with us a number of times on this program. And this is the time of the year that Consumer Reports puts out their car issue. So if you're thinking about a car, new to you, absolutely new or just new to you, and you'd like to know what they think about various cars and their reliability and safety and mileage and fun to whether or not they're fun to drive and so forth, you check out the magazine. It's a good resource. I have a couple of callers here. Let me, Mike, ask you an email here, which is coming from someone who is interested in a four-wheel drive or all-wheel drive vehicle that is fuel efficient.
Fuel efficient and all-wheel drive, and for many years, didn't ever go hand in hand at all. But I think that one of the best ways to get around it is to head to your Subaru dealer. The Subaru Impreza is Consumer Reports' top pick for a small car. We measured 27 miles per gallon overall, which is very impressive considering its all-wheel drive capabilities. Subarus have a long-standing history of good reliability. The new Impreza is very comfortable. It has excellent visibility with a low dashboard and lots of glass area. This is a model that will surprise you on how comfortable and quiet it is, and for about $21,000, it's a great buy.
Okay, hope that helps. Back to the phones, and we have a couple of Champagne callers. We'll take line two first.
Hi. I kind of wanted to go back to the discussion about diesel. For a really long time, I've been interested, I just can't understand why the automakers don't believe there's a market for a small diesel pickup in this country. You know, something like a Ford Ranger with a diesel engine, which I understand in particular that vehicle is available in many markets around the world, in South America and Australia and South Africa. You can get a Ford Ranger with a diesel engine, but I just don't understand why you can't get one here. And I was curious what the guests thought about that section of the market.
Okay,
I think one of the problems is getting diesel engines federalized. It costs a lot of money to pass all the emission standards, which are very different from different parts of the world as opposed to what's going on in the United States. Sad news about the Ford Ranger, though, that has been discontinued in the United States.
Yeah,
I think one of the problems is that the demand for small pickups has been very low in the last 10 years. The pickups that once were compact are no longer compact. I mean, the Dodge Dakota is a really big truck, although that started out small. Even the Toyota Tacoma is a lot bigger than it used to be. I wonder though, as the price of gas gets a lot higher, people are going to be turning to smaller vehicles. And maybe the automakers will see it fit to put a small four-cylinder diesel in some of these models. I think that would be awesome. And as a trivia answer, back in the early 1980s, Volkswagen had a
Caddy,
small pickup truck that had a diesel engine.
Yep. Yeah, and you probably are aware that there is a sort of very enthusiastic underground kind of group of folks who are dedicated to those vehicles. And if you can find one that's not all rusted out today, you probably spend like $6,000 to $8,000 on a used one.
Sure, good luck with that. But
yeah.
And it always was kind of curious to me that you had a front wheel drive pickup, but if you put a lot of weight in the back, the front end invariably comes up.
Sure.
And that's your drive wheel. So that never quite made a lot of sense to me, but that's okay.
Yeah, but they still get like 45 to 50 miles per gallon.
Oh yeah, great fuel economy. But as a pickup truck, I think I'd rather have a bigger frame and rear wheel drive.
Yeah, but most people are just going to move a dining table or a refrigerator, every couple of weeks or something. They're not going to be hauling 3/4 of a ton every
sure,
day.
Sure, it's not used for heavy-duty work.
That's right, that's right. All right, well, thanks for your comments.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Back to another champagne person. This is line one. Hello.
Hi. I'm wanting to replace a Chevy Astro van, and we need something that's got sort of that kind of cargo space that gets much, much better mileage, and I really wanted a hybrid, but it doesn't, the Ford Escape hybrid doesn't seem to be as big, and I'm trying to find something that's more on the size of the Astro van.
Right. Well, coming from an Astro, which was an ancient design, I mean, General Motors put out the Chevrolet Astro for forever, I think. And they're pretty tough trucks. But you would be surprised how nice the new school minivans are, whether you're looking at a Toyota Sienna or a Honda Odyssey or a Nissan Quest. These are vans that you take the back seats out. You've got tons of cargo space. And we got 20 miles per gallon overall in the Toyota Sienna that we last tested. So you'll be very surprised on how fuel efficient they are, how comfortable and quiet they are, and you'll find the handling just worlds better than your old Astro.
Yeah, that's one thing. The turning radius on the Astro is like worse than our. We have a big Ford van, and the big Ford van can outdo the Chevy Astro all day long in the turning radius. Other thing with the Astro van. I really wanted to get a hybrid if we could, but there's nothing very large in the hybrids yet.
That's correct. I mean, the problem with a hybrid, I mean, it's always good news and bad news with the hybrids. The good news with the hybrids is that they almost always improve fuel economy. The bad news with the hybrids is that it requires lots and lots of batteries to be installed in the vehicle so you can use the electric drive. Batteries still weigh a lot more than they should, and all that weight, you know, takes up cargo space, and it eats away at fuel economy. So right now we don't have a hybrid minivan, although you're not the first person that has talked to me about it. The other thing you might consider is the Toyota Prius V. This is a small wagon version of the Prius. Again, it's not going to have near the cargo space as your Astro, but we got 41 miles per gallon overall in Consumer Reports fuel economy testing with the model that we put through its paces. And that's quite quite good fuel economy for the amount of cargo space you're getting.
Yeah. We looked at the Ford Transit, and that gets like 26, they say, which, you know, compared to the Astro was good.
Yeah, the Transit does have a lot of space inside. For the people out there who don't know what the Transit is, like, it's kind of a small European style a delivery van. Consumer Reports has not tested one of these yet, but I've driven them, and they're fairly civilized for what they do.
Yeah, but nothing coming up on the hybrid horizon that's going to be anywhere near that size, I suppose.
Well, nothing that the auto companies are telling me, but I've certainly asked the question more than once.
Yeah, okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. On again to another caller. This is someone who is in Danville on line three. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
I'm looking to get a medium-sized car, something like a Matrix, but my eye was caught by the Kia Soul.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if you had any opinion about the Soul.
You know, I can talk about the Kia Soul and not even hum any bars of James Brown, so I guess that kind of puts me in a special category. The Kia Soul is what they call kind of one of these little box cars. It's much like
box. That's exactly what I'm after.
It's more. It's kind of like the Nissan Cube, and Honda used to have one also. The Kia Soul did pretty well in Consumer Reports tests. It got a more powerful 2-liter engine for the new model year, and you can get the 1.6-liter engine, but I'd definitely go with a 2-liter because you could use the extra horsepower that comes with it. We got 25 miles per gallon overall in Consumer Reports tests, which is quite good for a vehicle of its size. Average reliability, so it is recommended by Consumer Reports. I'd definitely make sure you take it for a decent test drive. The dimensions and the configuration of the body means there's some blind spots looking over your shoulder because of the thicker rear roof pillar. So make sure you fit in it okay and you can see out of it okay. But we like the Kia Soul.
Yeah. Well, did you evaluate it for a short interstate stretches, maybe 10, 15 miles on an interstate?
Oh, even more than that. As you probably know, Consumer Reports buys its own test cars, and we put thousands and thousands of miles on them. So we drive the cars on country roads, on interstates, just around town, taking our kids to soccer practice, the whole thing. It can get a little noisy inside. So when you do your test drive, insist on taking it up on the highway and to make sure that the noise levels are okay with you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you.
All right, thanks.
You're welcome.
I think that, you know, that's one of the things that I've heard about some of these cars that essentially are a box on wheels, that they can that the interior noise can be really a problem.
Well, you've got all that open space.
Yeah.
And the aerodynamics of like a brick. So it's definitely going to work hard to push itself through the air. And again, you kind of have the good news, bad news. If you want to make the car more fuel efficient, you have to make it lighter. If you want to make it quieter, you might have to add extra insulation or thick glass, which makes it heavier. So, you have to find a good compromise.
All right. This morning, in this part of Focus, we're talking with Mike Quincy. He's an automotive analyst at Consumer Reports. Their new car issue is out. If you're thinking about buying a car, either new or just new to you, this is a good source of information that rates cars on various categories, and if there's a specific car that you're looking for, you can look at that. Or if you're just interested in something like, for example, fuel efficiency, you can just look at that. It's the April issue of the magazine. It's out now, and questions here are welcome to 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I have an email here from someone who says, my husband wants to lease a car. I don't see the point. Is there some great benefit of leasing instead of buying?
You know, we can either talk about cars or we can do marital therapy.
Maybe we better leave the one aside and try to stick with the other one.
There's pros and cons of leasing versus buying. Dollar for dollar, the cheapest way to own a car is to buy it outright with cash. Granted, not many of us can do that. So that being said, you're down to financing. You can negotiate the rates of financing just like you can negotiate the rates of a lease. And while your monthly payment on a lease will be likely less than if you bought the car outright, at the end of the lease, you've got nothing to show for your money, and you have to sign up for another lease. So essentially, when you're leasing, you always have a car payment. The upside of the lease is that you can often drive a nicer car than you normally could. You would have to finance or buy. So that's kind of good. With a lease, you don't have to worry about maintenance because the duration of the lease usually goes for the duration of the warranty. So there's one less thing you have to think about. But dollar for dollar leasing generally doesn't make a lot of sense.
All right. Here's another email. It's kind of technical. I don't know how well you can respond to this. Someone writes, for more than a century, the engineering of the combustible engine has been based on what's called the four-stroke auto cycle. They want to know what you think of the potential of new engineering called a split-cycle engine. For example, they say there is a split-cycle air hybrid model that's being developed and tested by a company in Massachusetts called the Scuderi Group. And the writer says that it seems to show higher fuel economy, lower emissions, and some other benefits. You have any opinion or background on that?
We have not tested any of these products, although I have heard about this company in Massachusetts, and again, it's just right up the road from us, but we have not had an opportunity to experience their technology right now. It's just a lot of talk. I suppose if there is an emerging technology for the internal combustion engine that is going to drastically improve horsepower, I imagine that the major auto companies would be beating a path to their door.
Mm-hmm.
So there are probably some concerns maybe about durability or mass market production. I do think, though, that in the short run, you will definitely see greater efficiencies with the internal combustion engine. I think you'll see lighter materials. I think you'll see more direct injection. You'll see more turbocharging. And because the auto companies know that higher fuel standards are coming and they have to be prepared. So we'll see if this company from Massachusetts has enough substance to be able to lease this technology to the auto company.
Yeah. You know, a couple of weeks ago here in our community, our station sponsored a showing of the documentary film, The Revenge of the Electric Car. which is a movie that takes a look at the efforts of some big companies, some startups, who are trying to produce and market an electric vehicle, and that is an all-electric plug-in vehicle, and just how difficult it's been. And it's interesting, we had a discussion afterwards, and I sort of asked for a show of hands of people who were pretty much ready to go out and buy an electric car. And there were a lot of people who said, yeah, they would like that. And then I said, well, what's holding you back? And there were two things. One is that the cars that are available are quite expensive, and the range on a charge is pretty limited. And so we know that, GM has suspended production of the Volt because sales have not been good. Nissan has really committed very seriously to the Leaf, but they're having difficulty. And, you know, people have just, like Tesla, have said, okay, we're going to build a great electric car. Well, they've had a lot of trouble. Sure. What do you think is the future of the all-electric plug-in car?
Well, that's a great question, and it's something that even we debate back and forth in the halls of Consumer Reports. I think on the one hand, you have to applaud any company that is going to try to build a game-changing vehicle, and it has to start somewhere. I mean, back in the late 1800s or early 1900s, the first propulsion systems of cars were very dangerous. They were steam, they were electric, they were gasoline, and they exploded. And there was fires, and you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. But you have to start somewhere. So, you know, I think that what Nissan is doing with the Leaf and Chevrolet is doing with the Volt, they're really good ideas. I don't think they're ready for prime time. I think this whole thing about range anxiety has some real substance to it, because my own colleagues have, and when Consumer Reports tested the Leaf, we've run out of juice, and we haven't gotten to the track yet while we're commuting from our homes, and so it is, and it's not a matter of planning. It's just that you have this little computer readout on the screen of the car. It says distance to empty, and well, it dropped faster than we thought it was going to. In Consumer Reports testing, we found that the cold weather, for example, really detracted from the car's overall range. The battery technology has not been able to overcome that, and there's just a lot of downsides to the electrics. I mean, if it takes 7 hours to charge up, so you can get 20, 30, 40 miles or something like that. When you think about it, maybe it takes you less than 10 minutes to put gasoline in your car, you get maybe 400 miles out of it. As you said, they're also expensive, and I also think there's something to consider when you talk about green technology, and I want an electric car and I don't want to harm the environment. You have to be able to source where your electricity comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Northeast, we're getting our electricity from coal-fired power plants, which are horrible for the environment. So if you have millions of people plugging in their electric cars, certainly in the Northeast, you're making these the infrastructure and the grid and these power plants work overtime. I think you have to have a really strong debate about what really is green.
All right, another caller here, Pontiac, line 4, toll free line. Hello.
Hi. Hey, I'm a happy owner of my second Mini Cooper, and I'm wondering what you could say about those. I think they are not only fun to drive, but a lot roomier inside than people realize, and I absolutely love mine.
I think you are. I agree with you 100%. I love every Mini Cooper that Consumer Reports have tested. We've tested the standard coupe, the manual transmission. We've tested the convertibles. We've tested the hot rod S versions. We've tested the Countryman. We've tested the Clubman, and all of them have great steering and just a fun to drive characteristic. They're all a bit noisy though, which can be kind of a drag on the highway, but not so bad that you couldn't live with it. Great fuel economy. Like 33 miles per gallon overall in the last Mini Cooper that we tested. Decent reliability, not Toyota or Subaru quality reliability, but still good enough to be recommended by Consumer Reports. And I'm really glad, because it's been about 10 years since Mini Cooper's been selling cars in the United States, and they're holding up well, and they never fail to put a smile on my face.
Thanks.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Sullivan for another caller here, line 1. Hello.
Yeah, curiosity. I bought a Ford pickup truck, and they had a $530 fuel or advertising assessment. Does other companies also do that?
An advertising assessment? This is what you paid at the dealer?
Yeah, I mean, no, that's what Ford Company done, because I looked at the invoice that the dealer gave me, and then I got the original invoice the dealer had, and they had like a $120 fuel assessment and a $530, shall we say, advertising assessment.
I can't say that I've ever heard of that. I'm one of the buyers for Consumer Reports. I've bought over 90 vehicles in the last 10 years, and I don't ever remember seeing that on an invoice or a bill that we paid to buy a car. It sounds like you were gouged. I mean, if there's a gas guzzler tax, that's one thing, but I don't think they put those on trucks.
Well, this is a 2011 F-150 Super Cab truck.
I've never heard of that. I'm not quite sure what that means.
You ought to put that in a consumer's report. I think that'd be, like you say, a gouge.
Yeah. No. You got to be careful what kind of fees that the dealers put on you, and you got to make sure they're legitimate.
It is the dealer. It's a Ford Motor Company.
I
went back to the dealer, and they showed me about a half a dozen invoices from the company, and they all had this $500-some-odd advertising fee.
It was on the window sticker?
No, it was on the original invoice that the dealer receives from Ford.
Well, the dealers are just passing that cost on to you. I think that's probably a regional thing that all the Ford dealers are supposed to pay, but you don't have to pay for a dealership to run their own ads. That's not the consumer's responsibility.
Yeah, but I don't think it ought to be a consumer's responsibility to pay for Ford's advertisement either.
Exactly. Exactly. You're 100% right.
You ought to run that in your paper someplace.
Okay, thank you.
I am happier.
We're just at the point where we're going to have to finish up. I don't know if there's any last sort of thought you want to leave with folks.
Well, I think if you like, as you so graciously introduced this segment to your audience, I mean, the April issue of Consumer Reports is on newsstand now. We also have great information on our website, which is consumerreports.org. And if you want to buy a used car or a new car, the April issue of Consumer Reports is an absolute encyclopedia. There's everything you need to make a good choice on buying a good car.
All right. Our guest this morning, Mike Quincy, automotive analyst, Consumer Reports. Mike, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.